thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All right, text to me.
Here's John Williams.
Your sunshine song. Mm-mm. We're going to start featuring that for the rest of the week. Tell me the song that's making you sing and smile this week. Plenty of sunshine coming my way. Sorry. Hi, it's John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3, Saturdays, 10 a.m. to noon. On social media, WGN King John. Don't you think Felicity Huffman wishes that somebody more famous than her were part of this college entrance exam scandal?
There may be. This may not have come out yet.
She's sitting there going, really? You couldn't describe it as the Stanford sailing coach? Or the Yale women's assistant soccer coach? No, it's got to be the Felicity Huffman story. And by the way, my husband William H. Macy's even more famous than me, arguably, so why not make it him? Talk about shameless. I know their defense is going to be, well, we didn't know. We paid a college consultant a fee to help our son or daughter's resume, and they got him into school. We had no idea that they were doing these things. And you know what I want to know? Producer Olive, look this up for us, please. Net worth Felicity Huffman. And throw William H. Macy in there, too.
Oh, gosh.
Because not that that's the only way to keep score in life, but if I had the kind of success and nice life they do, I think I'd be able to weather the storm of my kid going to Palo Alto Junior College. But no! No! And they've always seemed like, well, not him. Shameless is the most reprehensible behavior by human beings on television ever. The last episode notwithstanding. Last episode of Shameless, we just watched it the other night. And in the whole episode, everybody was being nice to each other, and it was kind of had this feel-good, soaring vibe. And at the very end, William H. Macy, Frank, says something to Fiona that was, my family talked about it, in character, once again, shameless and reprehensible, or that was Frank going as far as he could go. I concluded that he was just a shameless person. But in real life, I don't think he is. And I always thought Felicity Huffman was a swell person. And then this! More about that a little later on. The big story today. Well, it's not the big story today. It's the big controversy today in Chicago. And that is this. Well, let's just walk ourselves through how we got here with this mayoral debate, shall we? Okay, so this is Carol Marine. She's got Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle there. They're asking them on Channel 5 a couple of things. You know, it's one of those forums, one of those debates. I'm not a big fan of turn to the opponent and tell us something you admire about them. That just seems like a question that's looking for controversy, and Lord knows they got it.
Ms. Preckwinkle, one thing you admire about Ms. Lightfoot?
That she's open and honest about her LGBTQ orientation. And I think it's really important in this country that we be respectful of differences and that we understand that all of us matter and that there is dignity in each and every one of us. And there has been so much discrimination and prejudice and homophobia in our country. It's very important that particularly prominent people declare their sexual orientation and do it with pride.
This is Lori Lightfoot's reaction to those words of praise from Tony Preckwinkle.
Coming in the context of a clear strategy to be as negative against me as possible, I can only hope that she wasn't blowing some kind of dog whistle. To try to motivate that base and say, oh, by the way, did you know? That's the thing that would be concerning if that was in fact the intent. We're never going to speak perfectly, but we are very intentional about the words that we use, how we say them, and what the impact is on audiences.
Okay, so Lori Lightfoot says, did you hear her call me gay a whole bunch of times, hoping that that would work to her favor? Preckwinkle responds to that.
That's ridiculous. I've always been a strong supporter of the LGBTQ community. I have members of that community on my staff and my campaign and in my government office.
Preckwinkle said, if I knew that question was coming, I didn't load up that answer.
No, that was not a prepared answer. It just occurred to me at the moment, and it was clearly something that I believe strongly.
I was just speaking from the heart. You go, you gay girl, says Preckwinkle. about Lori Lightfoot, but was she winking? Was she looking over her shoulder? Was she actually throwing shade on her opponent? Okay, so here's the last soundbite I'm going to play for you. And I think this is really interesting. This goes about 25 seconds or so, but the last 5 seconds are the reason I'm playing it.
Brett Winkle herself called that, quote, ridiculous, pointing to her own pro-gay rights record. And with one poll showing Lightfoot with a huge lead, Preckwinkle's not calling off the political attack dogs.
And I think it's important to, as I said, to point out the differences between me and my opponent.
Wait a minute. So she said, so after all of those things where she said, no, I'm just championing this woman's, you know, being out and being strong. I've always championed the gay cause. But then in that Fox News piece, she says, and I've thought it was important that we call out the difference between me and my opponent. Now, was she talking about the difference on their stand on revitalizing the neighborhoods? Or was it important for people to know? Is Preckwinkle saying, no, I don't know the answer to this. I truly don't. But it sure sounded like Preckwinkle was saying, I think it's important people know the difference between us and I'm not gay.
I completely disagree with you.
Well, play. Why? Because what am I doing wrong here?
Well, first of all, she, as I understand and recall, she does have a history of being very pro-gay rights. This isn't like, a member of Congress or House who's voted against gay marriage or things like that. You know, this, I think she's always been sort of at the forefront of that. Please someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the case.
I do, too.
Okay, so...
But that doesn't mean you can't have it both ways.
No,
because
you're
not gay. It's okay. Easy for you to point that out to somebody for whom you know that might not be a positive. Preckwinkle can say, I support gay rights. We've got them on my staff. People can vote for Preckwinkle. But if you, somewhere in the back of your mind, don't like the package that is Lori Lightfoot, in part because of her orientation, Preckwinkle can point that out.
I think, though, when she answers the question by saying, I'm going to continue to point out the difference, are you going to be negative in this campaign? And the answer always is, I'm going to continue to point out the differences between us. I don't think you can extrapolate from that by saying, and we all know the differences are that I'm not gay and she is.
Right.
I just think that's, I think you're looking, not you in particular, but I think that's the result of looking, trying to create something from what are perfectly natural answers if you're not looking for that particular angle.
Okay, but let's go to the first cut then. Ella, play it again for us. And this, tell me if this sounds, this is what got the whole ball rolling, right? Maureen says to Preckwinkle, tell me something you like about Lightfoot. Now, is this the staged opportunity for Preckwinkle to throw shade or to, I hate that phrase just because it gets overused, but, you know, she's going to blow a dog whistle here or not. Is this sincere or is this her actually cutting?
That she's open and honest about her LGBTQ orientation. You know, I think it's really important in this country that we be respectful of differences and that we understand that all of us matter and that there is dignity in each and every one of us. And there has been so much discrimination and prejudice and homophobia in our country. It's very important that particularly prominent people declare their sexual orientation and do it with pride.
The
question is, how do you hear that?
Well, I'm right, because I hear that as a an absolutely understandable answer, an answer that I would have heard her give it 2 years ago when she wasn't running
against
Lori Lightfoot.
Well, if Lightfoot hadn't said anything, I wouldn't have heard it that way. But it sure does sound like Preckwinkle is laying heavy on the gay part.
Well, and that's why I was surprised. And Lightfoot knows more about it than I do, obviously. But I was surprised she made an issue of it.
Because
it didn't sound like that until Lori Lightfoot made us listen to it like
well,
that.
Well, is it a reverse then? Is this Lightfoot actually trying to
I don't know.
Charge her base?
Right.
So there's got to be some sort of
this
shenanigans
is a double
and
reverse
hygiene.
Layup kind
yes,
of yeah.
Exactly. I'm trying to figure out the game, and maybe that's not all that instructive anyway. But again, I didn't start it; they did. Carol Marie, this is all your fault, Carol. Our news click at WGNRadio.com is asking you about that. Are you more or less likely? You could be utterly neutral about this. We're not asking you to discern what Tony Preckwinkle was up to there, or because maybe she was up to nothing. But we're asking you, since the issue is at play, and Lightfoot's the one that really took the ball and ran with it, we're asking you if Lightfoot's orientation is an issue to you. And it could be, yes, I'm more likely to vote for her. It won't affect my vote. or I'm less likely to vote. Wait, she's gay? I'm going to have a little trouble with that. So that's the question. Where
it's
are you on
2019.
That? I know. Hey, listen, I didn't start it, Steve. It's all Carol Marine's fault, and then Lori Lightfoot ran with it.
So you have two women. I don't know what their age difference is. Lori Lightfoot is younger. But, you know, demographics is all about differences, right? You have two African-American women, so they're sharing that.
Yeah.
What, and one's divorced and one's gay. What stands them apart? What's more motivating? And I think being gay actually is going to be more motivating for the gay community in Chicago than hurtful. I just do.
Lori Lightfoot is a wealthy bad person who helps rich clients do bad things. I believe that's what I heard this morning on the TV. It was a Preckwinkle commercial. And it's pretty comical because it has, you know, they always find the least attractive photo, poor Hillary, poor Donald Trump, but in the campaign. And since the president's become president, you only see from the other side the worst pictures of them. The sort of things you and I always delete from our phones times 1,000. Imagine that blown up on a poster or frozen framed on the TV commercial for 29 seconds. And in the Preckwinkle one, it's almost cartoonish. There's this face of poor Lori Lightfoot, and it's not her best. It wasn't her best selfie. So there she is on the screen, and then her eyes dart to the right or to the left. She goes, whoop. Kind of suspiciously, kind of like, you know, the way a bad guy does in a movie. Yeah, that's the ticket. She looks to the left like, anybody see me do something bad over here? Nothing's going wrong over here, you coppas. At least that's what those eyes said to me. And Preckwinkle and those people. It's so bad. It's almost funny. Just for the fun of it, when you get a chance, look up that of her husband. Do you have him as well?
William H. Macy's net worth is $25 million.
So here's people with $45 million. So they can peel off 15 or 50 grand to somebody and get their kid into a good school. So that kid can grow up and, what, have a nice life someday? Wait, mom and dad already have $50 million. I see too much of the world through the prism of how much available cash you do. But is it so bad to go to a good state school?
You know, the parents aren't the good guys in this story, but they're not the really bad guys in this story. The bad guys in this story are the coaches taking bribes and the facilitators fixing the SAT scores.
I guess so, but none of that happens if somebody isn't willing to give them money to do it. I mean, I think they're all tarnished, but I think Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy are the other 49 people. Macy's, as I saw the list, Macy's name isn't on it, Huffman's is. But Felicity and the other 49 of them are going to say we didn't know. And they may have more evidence against that, but I know they'd like to do that. Say, well, we paid money to boost his resume. We didn't want him to do anything illegal.
But if we didn't know these two women's names and it was just a group of 30 parents,
yeah,
we'd really be focusing on the fact that there's corruption at the SAT, apparently, and that there are coaches at these prestigious schools on the take.
Yeah.
You know, and instead we're focusing on her.
I'm feeling real bad for her about that, Steve.
I can tell, as she was taken away in handcuffs or arrested this morning.
Gary, real quick, jump in here. You're on WGN. What did you want to say, Gary? You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say you're absolutely right about Preckwinkle. She's playing to her base. She's saying, I'm straight. My Lightfoot is gay. You know, vote, do what you want. But she's hosing everybody.
Thanks for the phone call, Gary. I'm short of time. I want to get in another voice. Gary's on line one, and Craig is next. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Craig. You're on the air.
Yes, you're dealing with the wrong issues. The issue should be how you lower my property taxes, how are you getting the crime better on the streets, and everything else that's more important than your sexual orientation. I don't care one way or the other.
I don't either, and I think you're absolutely right about those issues are more important than that. But again, I didn't start this. So on our news click, when we ask, does that matter to you, you're going to say, no, not at all.
No, not at all, because there's more pressing, more severe issues than that.
You got that right. Thanks for the phone call. It's 129. Steve Bertrand has the news. And then after the news, listen to this now. Eric, Heidi Stevens posted a column in the newspaper. She was talking about somebody's struggle with cancer. And when she writes about that, they talk about the fight and the battle and the struggle. And then people lost their struggle or battle with cancer. And she was really interested in the verbs and the other words that she was using. But it got me to thinking about a story I heard not that long ago. And it said that the attitude you have, literally a positive attitude, does that make you more likely, somehow at an almost cellular level, does that make your body maybe more likely to fight the disease? Do you send electrochemical signals through the rest of your body from your brain, and a positive attitude helps? I know a positive attitude might encourage you to follow doctor's orders. I don't mean that. I mean, literally, does your attitude somehow impact your body's ability to fight? We're 18 stories up downtown Chicago, looking at sunshine, blue skies, some wispy white clouds, and temperatures in the low 80s today. 50 is the new 83. So I said that coming to work today, I was literally singing to myself, zippity-doo-dah, what's your sunshine song? And needless to say, I got 18,000 now texts. Let the sunshine in, fifth dimension. Sunshine on my shoulders, that would be John Denver. Sunshine song for me, John, is Golden by Jill Scott. And Jen DeSalvo will like this, 630 text, yes, ELO, Mr. Blue Sky, exclamation point.
You know, it's got a great cadence to run to.
Of course it does. Makes you want to go out and put in 20, doesn't it?
Of course.
So we'll continue to feature some of them. In fact, let's do that, Aleph. Let's just, for 630 and Jen DeSalvo, the next time we play a song, we'll feature Mr. Blue Sky.
You might see me running around the newsroom.
Heidi Stevens in the Chicago Tribune wrote the other day, last week after Alex Trebek announced he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer, I wrote a column about attaching the words battle and lose and win to the disease. I interviewed Chicagoan Sheila Quirk, whose four-year-old daughter and both parents have died of cancer. Quirk advocates for pausing to consider the words we fall back on when someone is diagnosed with cancer. Stevens wrote, quote, people who die from their cancer diagnosis are not weak, have not lost, are not losers. That's her actually quoting the mother in this case. People who survive their cancer diagnosis are not winners who beat a mighty foe. The woman says, allow cancer patients to define themselves always, but stop contributing to a paradigm of war for this specific disease. Never refer to someone as having, quote, lost their battle with cancer. Never say someone fought hard only to succumb. Never suggest a cancer patient has the ability to beat their disease. I'm going to read that again because it leads to our guest. This is this woman writing about this, and it's in Heidi Stevens' column, and she said, never suggest a cancer patient has the ability to, quote-unquote, beat their disease, as though, now I'm speaking, your will or your thoughts can impact your illness. And I've been wondering about that. We called Elizabeth Addington, who is a doctor over at Northwestern. She's a clinical health psychologist and an assistant professor of medical social sciences at the Feinberg School. Thanks for coming into our studio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jump in there. What do you think about that?
I think, you know, the point that this caregiver is trying to make is that when we use simple language and sort of our offhand kind of go-to language about something as complex and personal, that as well-intentioned as people may be, sometimes it has that opposite effect. And so it helps to be more careful and more
thoughtful. How would
it have
the opposite effect? What do you mean?
Well, so as she mentions, you know, using this language around beating cancer can then imply that someone was not good enough or strong enough or something to beat
cancer. I understand that. But I mean, I wonder about that very initial point, though. Do you think that the language we use, which is informed by the thoughts we have, impacts our ability to fight these diseases?
I think that our our language, our thoughts, our emotions. We know from our research that they do influence our psychological and our physical health.
Okay, you said influence, and that's all I'm asking for, because I don't think it's a cure-all. Nobody, exactly. I think, is suggesting that. But say I have an 80% chance, but if I'm positive about it, I'll take 82. Is it something like that?
We can't put numbers on it at this point, right?
But we're talking about a shade of the of the sort of ability that your body may have.
That's right. It may be part of helping influence your body's ability to fight the disease through processes related to, for example, the cardiovascular system or the immune system.
You really think so?
Yes, there's some research evidence to support that. There's much more research that needs to be done to identify exactly what's happening.
And again, you and I are not speaking about if I have a positive attitude, I will more likely follow doctor's orders.
Those things are also possible pathways for this process.
I wonder if that's really what it's all about. Because I'm more interested, maybe I should be more interested in that, because that's tangible. We understand that. Let's do that. At least we can do that. But I wonder if we're kidding ourselves. if we say, if you have a positive attitude, it's going to help you get better. For instance, if someone has a negative attitude, but they follow doctor's orders to a T, are they any worse off?
Well, I think part of it is in this shading of the language, right? So having a positive attitude may not necessarily help you get better. It could be helpful. It might also be that it just helps improve your quality of life in the meantime, and that has its own benefits.
I'm wondering if there's some neurochemical thing in your brain, and it sends signals down to the cells or to you. And I spoke about this off the air. Wasn't there a report that I saw on the CBS Morning News, and you knew what I was talking about? What was that?
Yeah, so that's related to telomeres, which are part of the genetic process, essentially.
What is that? What are we talking about here?
So we're talking about processes that are happening in your DNA replication and how those are related to your physical health. So there's some really initial evidence about positive psychological constructs being related to better physical health as measured by your telomere length. Also in other physical outcomes like, blood pressure, heart rate, immune system functioning.
Are we talking about fighting disease there or just feeling better every day, having a healthier and happier life?
Well, both, potentially.
Yeah. But I mean, so that's a new area of study, right?
Yeah, that's right. So all of these explorations about how exactly in the body this positive psychological process may influence your physical health is really growing. There's a lot more work to be done, but a lot of initial evidence in these different systems of the body that support further study to keep exploring.
Because, see, I've always just put this sort of on an anecdotal shelf. But this, they were really describing it as a sort of exciting, I don't know if breakthrough is the right word, but area of study, that your attitude can affect you at a cellular or DNA level. And if so, then okay. But then I wonder how you muscle that up, because some of us, are we kidding ourselves? Some of us are more optimistic than others.
Yeah, that's right. And when we're in difficult situations, it's human nature to focus on the negative. That can be helpful, right? To look out for the things that are potentially problems and to focus on trying to solve those problems. It's when we get to focusing too much on those and becoming overwhelmed by them that it's harmful. And we know that there are certain skills and practices that can help people learn how to take a break from focusing on some of that negative and see and experience more positive in their lives.
I wonder if it's easier to imagine maybe not positive thoughts having a positive impact, but negative thoughts having a negative impact. If I'm having negative thoughts, maybe my respiration is bad. Maybe my blood pressure goes up. Maybe my bile and my gut actually acts up. And so I could see how I could dial myself down, even if I can't make myself appreciably better. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. But we do know from research that people can have both in their lives. So they can be going through a really difficult situation and also have moments where they do have a positive experience, not just less of a negative experience.
So can I help somebody do that then?
Yes, sure.
I mean, give me some coping skills for a person who's struggling medically, who I want to at least give a positive outlook and maybe a positive impact?
Well, so some of the skills that are in the program that we research at Northwestern include things like just being on the lookout even for positive things that are already happening in our lives. So again, when we're facing difficult situations, we tend to focus on the negative. And so we need to make room to be on the lookout intentionally for things that are positive.
Even if it's a small gain.
Even a really small thing, right? Even a thing like, wow, this is a beautiful sunny day finally in Chicago and it's warming up a little bit. Or it's just a nice cup of tea. Or maybe you have a moment with a loved one that is just sweet and enjoyable. Even briefly, recognizing that and savoring it in the moment as it's happening, really engaging all your senses to get the full experience of that is one of the ways that you can even capitalize on what's already happening positive.
And I don't want to beg the issue, but I know someone who's got a host of medical conditions right now. And I've been thinking, okay, let's at least focus on the one thing that's getting better. Hey, look at that. You know, your blood pressure is better now, even though there's other complications with this person's overall health. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that in line with what we're talking about as well?
Yeah, it is helpful to keep sight of those positive things that are already happening. As long as in the process of doing that, we're not dismissing or diminishing the fact that there are these negative things happening. And those things carry real weight. And I think that goes back to some of the language in Heidi's article about not pretending like everything is okay and diminishing people's experience of how heavy these things can be.
Maybe it would be nice to acknowledge what they're going through.
That's
as
right.
Well. Yeah, yeah. Everybody wants some sort of validation once in a while. Yeah, this sucks.
Yes.
It's but I think she said, and maybe you would say also, let that person pick their language. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's not force your system on them,
yes.
But let's find the positive around them that we can.
Yes.
Lots of phone calls, lots of texts for our guests. So let's pause here. The number's 312-981-7200. This started with Alex Trebek and his saying to people on Jeopardy last week that he has stage 4 cancer, but that he's going to fight it. And Heidi found herself in the middle of a couple of articles that were using words that some people liked and some people did not. It made me think, does any of this matter? We have a few more minutes, fortunately, with Elizabeth Addington. She's a clinical health psychologist and assistant professor of medical social sciences at Northwestern Medicine Feinberg School of Medicine. The doctor is in. So we'll take some phone calls. Is that okay?
That sounds great.
Nothing else you want to insert here before we do that?
No, I'm happy to hear from your callers.
I am too. Let's talk to Karis. You're on WGN. Karis, thanks for joining us. What's up?
Hi, John and Elizabeth. I can't stress how important, and I'm so glad that you're talking about this. 4 years ago, May 14th, coming up here, I had a Whipple procedure. I had the same pancreatic cancer Steve Jobs died from. I was in the hospital at Northwestern for 3 weeks, and I was not getting any better. And they finally asked to send me home because I was in such a deep state of depression. You know, it's the fear, it's the horrible pain from the surgery. Within a week of getting home and my mother-in-law taking me outside on the patio and getting into the sunshine and getting back out in my garden, my health, I recovered so much more quickly because of that positiveness that was surrounding around me, and just getting back to life as normal as it could possibly be. So I'm really glad that you're bringing this to the attention of others that are fighting cancer.
Yeah, no kidding. I want her to comment on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing well now. So the kind of thing that you're talking about can be really important for a lot of people to have that time to feel like themselves, to notice bright spots in their day and in their lives. And that can give people, you know, a lot of energy then to help recover both psychologically and in terms of taking care of themselves physically, and as we were discussing before the break, some potential physical processes happening in the body as
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, she forced me to go outside, and I felt the sun on me, and it was just like my world was so much more brighter and back to normal. Not 100%, it never will be, mm-hmm. but my immune system was just in the clinker. I mean, I cried every day in the hospital. I wasn't getting any better.
It's funny you mention your immune system.
The doctor had just, you know, decided to move me out. So
I'm really glad to hear your voice. You sound great, and I think you're helping a lot of people here, Karis. Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you, John.
You work with HIV patients, is that right?
We do. We've done some research with people with HIV.
Are you noticing any connection between attitude and them?
Yes, we do. So there's been some research where all other things being equal, so their health status, their engagement with their medical care, looking at their positive emotion does later predict how long they survive.
Really?
Yes. We also have done some research with people with HIV where we teach them some of the skills I was mentioning earlier for noticing and building more positive experience in their lives. And we do see some improved outcomes, both psychologically and health-related in those cases.
John, jump in here. You're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Thank you for taking my call. I am a three-time cancer survivor and a heart attack survivor. Wow. The only way I survived, number one, you have to believe in your caregivers. Number two, you have to believe in God. Number three, you have to believe in yourself that you will make it through. You have to stay positive. You cannot focus on anything at all negative. And I have one more thing to say. I used to date a woman who was a perfusionist who worked in open heart surgery. And she told me, she said, as God is my witness, every time we have a patient going into open heart surgery who's crying, they don't make it. So my lesson is you have to be strong. You have to believe that you can make it. And I survived by believing and having good caregivers.
Yeah, no kidding. John, we're out of time. I'm really glad you called. Your reaction to that is?
Yeah, again, thank you, John, and glad to hear that you're also doing well. And I appreciate your passion about how important this was for you to focus on the positive. I do want to acknowledge that for most people, it is important, at least sometimes, to recognize that there are difficult things happening and that we do have negative emotions and negative experiences. And what we encourage for most people is not to pretend like those aren't happening or to completely ignore or deny the negative, but to also make space alongside those for the positive.
Dr. Elizabeth Addington is over at the Feinberg School at Northwestern. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's at 158, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I didn't do that on purpose.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I'm thinking sunny.
Here's John Williams.
Sunny thoughts. How about that? It's 209. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Rokon, Anna Gavlantis inform and entertain you in the next hour. By the way, Paul Vallis is in their studio this afternoon with his endorsement in the mayor's race at 4:40.
Wake up, sunshine. Open up your sleepy eyes for me.
With all of this sunshine and blue skies, we said, well, tell us something that's...
I've been waiting all the night.
A song that's on your mind. I was literally walking to the red line today, and I was singing Zippity Doo-Dah. And so you've been texting in, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. Saturday Sun by Vance Joy. Sunshine Superman by Donovan. That's a fun song. Wake Up Sunshine Chicago. That was That. Beautiful by Carole King. And the list goes on. By the way, can we do that other one from the cartoon show? Somebody said, could you please play How About Let the Sunshine In by Pebbles and Bam Bam from the Flintstones?
What? I
think it's a nut.
That's not it. Oh. Stand by. Here it comes.
Mommy told me something.
All right, that'll be enough of that. We've now heard more of that than you need to hear. With so many great sunshine and happy songs out there. About our last guest in the last half hour, a doctor from the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern. Thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Elizabeth Addington. She's a clinical health psychologist, and she was talking about that conversation that Heidi Stevens has started in town in the Tribune. Does the attitude that you have or the words you use have anything to do with your ability to get better? If you, like Alex Trebek, say, I'm going to fight this thing, and you have a positive attitude, does that literally give you a better chance to fight the cancer or whatever it is that ails you? And some of you, as you heard, absolutely say that makes a difference, but some of you are more skeptical. John 8:15 says, your faith, if you pray harder, then your loved one will live, or vice versa. Some people believe that. 224 says, I'm so glad this is being talked about. I was diagnosed with stage 3 invasive ductal cell breast cancer. Although my treatment, all through my treatment, I was told that having a positive attitude would help me get through everything, chemotherapy, radiation, etc. My doctor never told me what stage my cancer was until I asked him after all of my treatment was complete, and he then told me I was a strong stage 3. But he did not want to tell me because he was afraid I would not have been positive for the treatment, says Beth. John 7:73 says, this sounds like pseudoscience. What studies is this doctor referring to? Two more. 847 says, I am soon to be a second time cancer survivor, and I know my positive mental attitude contributes to my well-being in spite of my diagnosis. Also, research shows that writing down 3 positive things a day will transform one's attitude. And finally, 847 said, you don't have to believe in God. What a dangerous thing to say. So you're on both sides of the spectrum on that. The doctor said that, yes, the attitude might make you more inclined to adapt well to your treatment. That is, you'll do it. But she also said there may be something at a cellular level going on here, and that research continues along those lines.
With one of my best friends, she fought colorectal cancer back in 2010 and then was diagnosed with jaw cancer just a few years ago. I want to say 2015, maybe.
Yeah.
And what really helped to fight it was a lot of glitter and sparkles and unicorns. And she said that she was like a unicorn because, you know, these two random cancers that she had don't really happen to people. And she fought it, and right now she's clean, knock on wood.
You know, so this sounds so inconsiderate then when we hear stories like that. And but I'm fairly dispassionate about it, right? And I'm just saying, if that helps make your life manageable, that's great. But do we really think that if you have a bad attitude, it's going to hurt? Do you think that a good attitude actually helps? And I don't know the answer to that. That's why we asked the doctor. And she said, there's some evidence that's coming in, but, you know, it's only marginal, the evidence or the difference it makes. I really think the opposite is more true. Don't you, Jen? That is, if you have a very bad attitude, I can literally see you willing yourself into, say, less resistance, and that would hurt your chances of recovery at least.
Well, you might also be engaging in more risky behaviors, using more alcohol or cigarettes or stuff to dull the pain that isn't helpful to your body, and possibly not giving it the ability to rebound as much as, say, I don't know, just being around happy situations, eating healthy food, going for walks with friends.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I think most people do. Billy Marovitz is in our studio. Do you know that name? You will if you don't already. He's the producer of a show called Miracle. Billy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Your name's William. Do people call you Billy?
They do call me Billy.
Billy sounds like a producer name.
I don't know, but it's been an eye-opening experience.
Eye-opening meaning your production of this story, this musical about the 2016 Cubs. Have you produced musicals before?
I have not.
What's your background?
I was in the Senate for about 20 years, and then when I left there, I bought a lot of the land in River North, and I put up 60-story buildings all over River North. I'm involved in about 25 restaurants all over the city and country, including Carnival, which I helped to operate on Fulton. And this was just another creative message that came to me in the middle of the night that I should think about doing a musical about the 2016 Chicago Cubs, and as seen through the eyes of a typical blue-collar family in Chicago, of generational Cub fans. Highs and lows, ups and downs, overcoming adversity.
What motivates you on this? Is it your desire to do a musical, or is it your desire to tell the Cubs story? Are you a Cubs fan or a theater fan that's moving this?
I'd say both.
Yeah,
I'd say I'm a huge sports fan. Huge sports fan. Go to games all the time, live and die with all of our teams. But I love the theater, and I think if you put something together creatively that musically tells a story, that both Cub fans and theater fans will really enjoy it.
I'm thinking of Oprah. I'm thinking of Elton John. I'm thinking of a lot of people who are creative and had a lot of resources, and their musicals didn't go. Their stories weren't as successful as they thought they would be. What are you discovering about that?
Well, I've discovered the same thing. I mean, Sting had a musical, didn't work. Paul Simon had a musical, didn't work. U2 and Bono had a musical, didn't work. But then we have they didn't
have Anthony Rizzo either now, did they?
They didn't. But now we have the Four Seasons and we have Carole King. Those musicals were hugely successful.
I saw the trailer or the ad for the Four Seasons, and I think that looks like fun.
No, you mean the Temptations.
Yes. Pardon me, the Temptations. Right. And Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, one of my favorite shows.
Right.
I really like the Carole King production, too. I thought that was dynamite. Beautiful. But who knows? I mean, it's hard to tell if these things are going to
happen. But I think that the music, as written by Michael Mahler, who's a fantastic composer, I think people will come out of the theater humming, singing, or whistling several tunes.
So what's your role in this? Did you come up with the story, or did you just come up with the idea and then turn it over to other people?
Both. I came up with the story, with the concept. I hired all the creative people, the book writer, Jason Brett, the composer, Michael Mahler, and the director, Damon Kiley, and I'm raising the money to put the show on and putting my own money in big time. So I'm involved in every single aspect of this.
What's your plan? Open it in Chicago, take it to Broadway?
My plan right now is to open in Chicago. Our opening day is May 17th. We're going to have two opening days, one for the Chicago celebrities, so to speak, and a week later, because the Cubs are out of town then, a week later for the Cubs and the Cub organization on the 23rd or 24th of May. And who knows, whatever the success is, that will determine the future.
So is it the story of this family, or is it the story of 100 years ago they won the World Series, and then there was a black cat and a goat and all of these hijinks, and then we finally win the World Series? What's the story?
It's the story of a family. Their ups and downs, their highs and lows, and who have been generational Cub fans. And we see this family as the season unfolds. So we see the season unfolding. We see all the highlights. We see the family going up and down as the season goes up and down. We see the parade at the end of the show and the Cubs celebrating. So hopefully you will feel, if you're a Cub fan, you will feel kind of nostalgic about what you remember and where you were and what you loved most. But hopefully you'll get involved. You'll be invested in this family of wonderful people who have lived and died with the Cubs.
Did you worry that telling it to a family I don't know was risky? That is, I know the team. There's enough stories in the season without running it through that filter of somebody else. Talk about that.
I think one of the things is that everybody out there is not a baseball fan, you know, and so this is a show for everybody, for families, for male and females who are not baseball fan and who want to invest in a family and get attracted to a family, but also want to relive the thrills, the miracle that was the 2016 Chicago Cubs.
Everybody comes up to you, I'll bet, and they go, okay, this is what you got to put in the play.
Everybody.
My son, and I'm about to tell you the story of my son, who was so wrapped up in the World Series games that he couldn't sit in front of his TV, and he walked up and down his street and looked through people's windows because he had such high anxiety about it. I had no idea. I knew Grant loved baseball and the Cubs. I wasn't doing that. But that's the way people experience that.
John, the anxiety in this city, the tension in the city was palpable. As we got into the playoffs and they played the Giants and they played the Dodgers, were they going to get to the World Series to get to Cleveland? And then they played Cleveland and we're down 3-1. And how many people just kind of gave up and said, I knew it was too good to be true.
And that last game was epic, too. I mean, you wouldn't have written that in the script except that it happened that way.
Absolutely.
Are there hummable songs in this production?
Fantastic songs.
I read Chris Jones' review, and he didn't talk about that. Has anybody heard the songs yet, the score?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think anybody's heard the score, but I have sent a few of the songs to the Cubs.
And
they loved them. I can tell you about a couple songs, and I don't know how much time you have.
Let's do this. Let's pause and tell me a little bit about them. By the way, if anybody could use a couple of good songs right now, it's the Cubs. I mean, the season hasn't started, but they've had a bad run in the news the last few weeks, so I'm sure they just can't wait for this and the season to start. Preview in your own way for us a couple of the songs. Billy Marovitz is in our studio, the producer of Miracle. Yeah, he's now a musical producer, too. You may have known him from his political days or his together business ventures, restaurants, and so on. But there's a musical that will open up at the Royal George. What's the open date for this?
May 17th is the opening date for Chicago, the Chicago Public, and we're having a special grand opening night for the Cubs and the Cubs organization, either May 23rd or May 24th.
Can I get tickets for this now? I didn't see them.
Absolutely. You can get tickets on Ticketmaster or by calling the Royal George Theater.
Okay.
The tickets are available.
So this is about the 2016 season and the Cubs winning the World Series, told through a family, a typical Chicago family?
Exactly.
Mom, dad, couple kids, that sort of thing?
Mom, dad, kids, grandfather, own a bar in the Wrigleyville neighborhood.
What's it called, this bar?
The bar is called Maggie's, after the matriarch of the family.
Nice.
And Maggie has died, but one of the really nice songs is a very tender song called Maggie's.
And I can't play it. I don't have it. How does it go?
Oh, I'm not gonna ruin the song by telling you, but I'll tell you what, I do have songs on my my radio, and there's a couple songs. There's a song called that all Chicagoans would be familiar with called "I Hate the Cold." Okay, a fabulous song.
Wait a minute, that's new to this production.
Every song is new.
Sure,
every song is new to this production.
But that's the lament of Cub fans in April and May when
that is the lament of Cub fans. But the mother in this. In this show is from down south, and she's moved. She met her husband and moved up here, and she talks about how she's from Florida. I hate the cold, but you know what? I kind of like my life here.
Yeah, that's a good Chicago idea. So, what else you got on the?
We got a song called "Superstition." You know, every fan has a superstition. There's tremendous superstitions among fandom, but there's also tremendous superstitions among the players. And we're going to sing this song, dance a song called the Superstition Dance, and we're going to show on screens superstitions of the fans.
What's the line from that song?
Oh, gosh. I couldn't even tell you.
Well, you produced the show. You didn't write the show.
No, I didn't write the songs. Right.
Okay, give me another song.
Another song is Cubby Blue Blues. Another song is called The Voice Above the Crowd. It's a tribute to the great announcers in Cub history. A really beautiful song. And I can give you a couple stanzas from here.
Okay.
It was a time, another day, when hometown heroes never used to go away. It was a time, they'd like to say, when those who played the game still had a sense of play. That meant there were no steroids in the game, and people used to stay with the same team. These were the voices of our youth, so finely etched into the memories of our youth. They're up in the booth, and they're finally etched into the memories of our youth.
But then are you talking about Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau
and Jack Rickhouse and Ron Santow and Harry Carey and Jack Quinlan? Yes, the great voices that really exist in every city in America. The Red Barbers, the Vince Scullies, the Mel Allens, the Jack Bucks. And this song was sung in 2003 at the All-Star Game here in Comiskey Park as a tribute to the great voices above the crowd that exist in every city in America. It was sung by Dennis DeYoung, the lead singer of Styx.
It would be.
And he went on the field as they played a tribute to all these wonderful announcers.
So this is an original song that you
this
borrowed.
This is an original song that we own. So my cohort in this production wrote this song. His name is Julian Frazen, and he wrote this wonderful song that I think people are going to love.
But he wrote it back in the day.
He wrote it back in the day.
And so this is one song that is not brand new to the production.
It's brand new to being out there.
Who knew about this song? I never heard about this.
You're going to hear a lot about this song because it's absolutely a beautiful song.
Okay, we're out of time. What's the showstopper? Is it that one? What's the one that they're going to go, but he did the thing I was...
I think there's a lot of showstoppers. Sometimes miracles do happen.
Yeah.
That's a song called "I'm Out" after the Cubs lost in the playoffs in 1985 to the Mets. Cubby Bear Blues. These are all songs I think people will enjoy, will sing, will hum, and will hopefully remember.
Okay. Well, hopefully in a couple of years you're going to be sitting here going, John, we're doing this musical about the 2021 White Sox. Who knew? Or something like that. Are you going to be a musical producer now, or is this a one-off for you, Billy?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see how this goes. You know, one never says never. In politics, I said that. We never say never. In show business, we never say never.
Well, congratulations already. What a good idea. And I think folks could use a dose of that. So I wish you nothing but success. This is at the Royal George.
Royal George.
Hopefully has a nice run here and goes off to a national audience, which... Bleacher Bums did. That's a local idea that had a national audience, right?
Right, absolutely.
Bleacher Bums. What am I talking about? Was that the name of the show?
Bleacher Bums. Yeah. Jim Belushi was in it.
Yeah.
Right. This is a totally up show. It's a family show. It's a feel-good show. And it's an homage to the Cubs and families who have supported the Cubs through 108 years.
Billy Marowitz's Miracle opens at the Royal George May 17th. You can go to Ticketmaster to get seats for that or the Royal George box office. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Congrats in advance.
It's a beautiful day.
Do not adjust your thermometers. It's getting warmer. The sky is blue. The sun is shining in Chicago. And everybody is smiling except Felicity Huffman. Steve, I had to laugh.
I'm Why? Watching,
because I got CNN over here, and a second ago the scroll was, you know, Felicity Huffman scandal.
Right. It's.
I'm not kidding. Felicity Huffman was the word, and it wasn't, you know, corrupt college admissions officials or a company that takes money and cheats for people or 49 other defendants who are, in fact, in the university systems across the country. It was the Felicity Huffman story.
So if you're Lori Loughlin or Loughlin, who is in Full House, and it's the Felicity Huffman, are you calling your agent saying, come on,
I know,
this should be my scandal, too?
Lori had more of an impact on my own life than Felicity Huffman did. I'd call it the Lori Loughlin scandal.
Why? Because what was your show?
Well, Full House. I grew up at the same time.
I had such a crush on her when I was younger.
My wife and I were talking about it, and she said, well, she's a mainstay on, was it the Lifetime Channel? Does she do some of their Hallmark Channel? She does some of those movies? Loughlin, I'm thinking about. Clearly, Felicity Huffman has the better resume. She was nominated for an Oscar. Remember Sports Night?
Yes, I love that show.
What a great show that one was.
Not David Krause. He was my English teacher. Krause, right? Krause.
You're thinking of the producer of the show?
No, who's the actor who then went on to be on Six Degrees?
Oh, yeah, sure. I saw the faces because I watched a lot of clips today. I'm no good at this game, Steve. I can't help you.
Josh Charles, I think.
You guys both have admitted you're bad with names, right?
Yes. But it was a good cast.
That was a good show, yeah.
You know, though, sometimes when people are in the news, either because something good happens or bad happens or they die and suddenly their estate gets a lot of money because people go out and buy their records or somehow. I don't know that Felicity Huffman's meter is going to spin any faster. I don't see the upside for her on this. And it's just such a ridiculous story. We'll talk more about it in just a little bit.
Peter Krause.
Okay, Steve, I'm glad you found that.
Bubala texted me.
Always the producer. Thank you, producer Matt, and now host Matt Bubala. The Spertus Institute for Jewish Learning and Leadership in Chicago is going to have another one of their critical conversations. We interviewed the MC of last year was the first year they did it. I think this is the second year they're doing it now, where they bring in some marquee names to talk about some issue. So this year they're bringing in Bill Richardson, who is the governor of New Mexico from 2003 to 2010. They're bringing in Anna Navarro, the GOP strategist and political commentator on CNN. They're bringing in Rick Santorum, the senior political commentator. He works for CNN now. And was a candidate, of course, for Republican nomination for president in 2012, 2016, U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania, yada, yada, yada. And obviously a great conservative voice. The MC is the Emmy Award-winning Candy Crowley, the journalist and former chief political correspondent for CNN, who, it says here, is known for her nonpartisan insider's look at the issues. The issue they're going to be talking about in this case is immigration. Boy, the timing on that couldn't be better. Candy's on a phone line. Candy Crowley, John Williams, you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hey, I'm very good. I think you all are having entirely too much fun. But
yeah. Can you tell the sun is shining in Chicago for the first time in a long time?
And here, too, and it's 42 degrees in Washington.
You're in the nation's capital. So
yes.
What are you doing these days, Candy? You're coming to Chicago for this. What else occupies your time?
I am coming to Chicago, but look, I must say the appeal here, and Spertus is a great institute, but the other appeal here is I have family that lives in Chicago, so I get to do a little twofer trip.
Oh, I'm glad.
I am writing a book, which, by the way, is torturous, which I just never had any idea how torturous it would be.
Why is it so hard? You've got nothing but the best stories.
Well, you know, the problem is I'm sort of my own editor. So I mean, I'm not supposed to be, but I am. So I'll write down a sentence and then I'll look at it and I think, should that be the or a?
Yeah.
Should I say swam or should I say, you know, dog paddle? Finally, the publisher said to me, geez, just write something down.
Get it on paper. We'll fix it.
Exactly. You know, that's what I'm afraid of, though.
At this event that you're moderating, so I presume the three of them are going to sit around, stand around, and talk about the immigration issue from various angles.
Right.
Nothing
right.
seems to be more vital to America's, at least political discourse these days. Is this about the wall, or is it about, you know, something broader than that?
Yes, and something broader than that. I mean, there's sort of four things that we want to look at. One is, of course, the wall, because that's become sort of the symbolic for what do we do to secure our borders. I mean, that's the overarching question with the wall. So, yes, we're going to talk about that. But then there is what happens to the folks that are already here. If we ever could get an immigration plan, then what happens to those who don't have papers, who are already living and have lived in some cases for decades in the U.S. Then there's legal immigration, which has to be fixed because it's, you know, their quotas and from different countries, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a whole other sort of tranche that we can get into. And then, you know, how you enforce going down the line. I think everybody knows at this point that Ronald Reagan did a vast, not pardon, but whatever the word is for saying to those who were here without papers, okay, you can apply to be U.S. citizens, but after that we're going to be really strict, and here we are where we are. And I just have to say one thing which startled me, because I was looking on the Spurtis website, and one of the quotes they have is, I think it's a Gallup poll, but don't hold me to that, that found that last summer, at least, the number one issue cited by Americans that they were worried about was immigration. Which really, usually it's like jobs and...
Why do you think that is, Candy? Why is immigration such a big deal?
I think it's actually less about legal immigration, obviously, than those who cross the border or come in otherwise. And in fact, most people are here without documents, just overstayed their visa. They didn't come across the border. But I think, you know, look, let's face it. There's both presidents since Ronald Reagan have struggled with this. And sometimes there are these huge, you know, massive influxes. Let's face it, it's a good political football for both parties, certainly in this administration we have seen it be headline after headline after headline. So I think there's some fear, I think there's some humanity, I think there's, you know, it's a human rights issue because a lot of these people are looking for asylum. So I think it brings together a lot of feelings, like we want to be, that we picture ourselves as this welcoming nation, and yet, you know, well, what does welcoming mean? Does everybody that comes and wants to stay here, do everybody get to come? And it's just a difficult issue that brings to the fore a lot of emotional responses.
Of the four topics, I do the wall last, or you'll never get to the other three.
I
think that's such an unnecessary, you know. So here's my politics. I think that is the least pressing of them all. And I think the whole issue is not pressing for... That is the wall issue, but it has become that. The president, through the sheer will of his personality, has been able to make that not only a successful campaign plank for himself, but also an issue that Americans now really care about. And yet I have not found the person, okay, I live in Chicago, but I still haven't found the person whose life was significantly altered because somebody came across the border illegally. I just don't see the impact. But that's me.
Right. No, I mean, I think you're right, and I think, again, I think that we all grew up learning about, you know, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, and that's, I think, how many of us view this country, like, come here. For all its faults, this is a great country, you can be free, and then having a policy that keeps people out, or, in this case, a fence or whatever, is sort of against what a lot of people think we are. But I will tell you that both parties think there has to be a way to control the border. It's just that, and by that I mean the southern border.
Yeah,
it's just they disagree on how.
Well, that's why you've got Rick Santorum there, but you've also got Bill Richardson there, Anna Navarro, right, too. By the way, so if you want to get tickets to this, incidentally, this is the Spertus Institute for Jewish Learning and Leadership in Chicago, and you can get tickets. They are $36 VIP tickets for $100, which include VIP seating and a post-program reception with the speakers. Visit Spertus, SPERTUS.EDU, Spertus.EDU. They're not too far from we are. They are at 610 South Michigan Avenue. Valet parking is available, and this is Sunday, March 17th at 4 p.m., Do you have an opinion about the job Jim Acosta has been doing at your former network CNN covering the White House?
You know, let me say in advance, this is always sticky for me, simply because these are all people I know and have worked with and all of that. And somebody had asked me that question, and I honestly think my best answer is he doing it the way I would do it? And the answer is no. And for this primary reason, if your job is to get the best information out of people, what I found years of doing a Sunday show, years of interviewing people, is that the minute you are, and, you know, tough questioning, yes, many thumbs up, confrontational, argumentative questions shuts people down, and they immediately revert to talking points, and you don't get what you want, which is information. And so I think once you've created that confrontational zeitgeist between you and whoever you're covering, you don't get anything useful.
Even if the White House, even if Sarah Sanders started it, I guess it's going to be incumbent upon the press to not engage.
Well, no, I think engagement is fine. Hostility is not. And I think sometimes it comes across as hostility. I mean, maybe I'll use hostility instead of confrontation. But I just think if you are clearly upset and you are, stirring the pot, I don't think you get great answers that way.
I think that's an interesting point, yeah.
So to me, it's not how you get what your job is, which is to get information. On the other hand, I've had people that really have pushed me the edge. I get the instinct.
That's got to be in your book. And I want to amend my observation about Sarah Sanders. I said even if she started it, I suppose there are some members of the press that feel if she'd be more honest or less confrontational herself, then the whole thing would go better. But
right.
I understand the position that it is, no, it's those mean-spirited questions, or it's that bank of hostility that you can sense from the press corps that she's reacting to. So I don't know who started it, but however interesting that TV is.
We could agree that the atmosphere just is awful.
Amen. Amen to that. When does the book come out?
As soon as I write it.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you, and have a great time in Chicago, and I'm glad
that you'll be able to
visit with some family too, Candy Crowley.
Terrific. Thank you so much, you guys. Have a good one.
Spertus.edu to get tickets to her moderating Santorum, Navarro, and Richardson talking about immigration. I mentioned on my way to the Red Line today that I was literally in my head singing Zippity Doo Dah, Zippity A, My Oh My. What a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine coming my way. And I said, I don't know why that song was on my head, because there's better songs about sunshine and pretty days. And boy, have you been texting them to us. We're featuring some of them today. And I think we'll do this tomorrow, too, when it's going to be 97. One quick note here. We'll take a break. I'll finish this thought after the commercial. We'll say hello to Anna DeVlantis and Ro Khan and get the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But this business about Felicity Huffman, Laura Loughlin, and other famous people, less famous people, but connected people getting their kids into marquee universities because they paid a lot of money to an organization that cheats for them. Have you been following that story, the Felicity Huffman story today? Illinois had its version of that. I've been thinking about it, and I went back and read the Tribune coverage of it. What was that? Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis. Do you guys remember about 10 years ago? I think it was 2009. It was the story about every state lawmaker mm-hmm. was able to get two free admissions to the University of Illinois.
Yes.
And then other high-ranking state officials were pressing the U of I to get their friends or their kids or their nieces and nephews
yes.
into the U of I.
Yeah, it was a big clout scandal.
It was quite the scandal for the Category 1 kids who are given special attention. And they finally got rid of that special treatment. They no longer have that. I don't think they each get two anymore. I guess that's our version of this in a way.
I suppose. But
do you guys remember that story
I do.
By any chance?
Yeah.
Very much so.
There you are now. Talk to me, Rogan.
Yes, I'm speaking to you now. I'm speaking now by way of microphonic.
I know. I got buttons to push.
Yeah. So I'm a little confused by this story. I'm not 100% sure where the criminality piece comes in because the... I mean, this is where you need a Mike Monaco. If you're Felicity Huffman, this will be the next thing that Mike Monaco, our legal analyst, ends up with, will be Felicity Huffman. And it's sort of like, you're on, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this is just a mother trying to help her child get into a fine school.
Yeah.
But I mean, the difference here is that they faked up. Right? This is the criminality comes in that they faked up
their resumes. And
they sent a donation to a charity when it wasn't a charity. It was a way to buy your kids' way into school. Plus, they had people take tests for the kids, including Felicity Huffman's oldest daughter.
They literally cheated on tests. They had one kid on a football team. They said he was the long snapper. He wasn't on the team and he weighed 145 pounds. They had another kid on a team that didn't exist at the school.
Right. So, bribing coaches, faking athletic resumes. This seems pretty criminal to me.
Is that a federal crime? To say you're a long snapper and you're not. I mean, let's face it. Cody Parkey said he was a place kicker. Why is he not going to federal prison?
All right.
I mean, that's where we go. Thank you very much.
Bye.